One moment, please.
You all set? Okay. Well, good afternoon, everyone. This is Julie Fedorchak with the Public Service Commission gathered on the 12th floor of the Capitol for a work session on PU-14-842, the Dakota Access Pipeline Project permit request. With me here today is Commissioner Christman and Commissioner Kalk. Are you gathering with us by phone?
Yep, I'm right here.
Okay, excellent. I just have a couple of things to say on the front end. I'll ask you guys for your opening comments, and then we'll get started on the second work session here scheduled on this project. So we had three hearings, one work session. In the last work session, we outlined what was missing still in terms of late-filed exhibits from the company. Zach Pelham and I have talked today about what the latest information is, and he's going to give us an update on what's been submitted to date. We're still missing some of the late-filed exhibits, so we had kind of hoped in our last session to have all those by the time we gathered for this work session, and there's still some issues pending. So we'll get an update from him and go from there. So, Commissioner Christman, do you have any thoughts?
Well, I have a lot of thoughts on it, but Mr. Pelham's always very organized, so I'll just step back and let him go through his things, and then I'll piece together any questions that are still unresolved.
Okay. Commissioner Kalk, any opening comments?
No, I think you both laid it out perfectly. Just get an update and a lot of issues to work through, but I think I'm glad we're having this work session and maybe schedule one at the end because I'm sure we'll have one more of this, but I look forward to the update as well.
Okay. All right. So really at the end of the last work session, we identified the reroutes as being the company was going to evaluate the merits of some of the reroutes that were discussed during the hearing and get back to us with a late-filed exhibit on their analysis of that. And that has not been filed yet. Enbridge, there's some outstanding issues and dialogue occurring with the company in Enbridge, and Zach might have an update on that. And then there's a number of smaller issues we can go through, but I think we'll just kick it over to Zach Pelham, our attorney on this issue for now, and we'll go from there. Thanks, Zach.
Thank you, Commissioners. Yes, I have spoken with representatives of Dakota Access, Enbridge, as well as Derek Broughton, representing the intervener group, the large intervener group. So let's, as you mentioned, Commissioner, the analyses as to some of the reroutes that were discussed, starting off with the Hovde property. Dakota Access has indicated they've reviewed the Hovde proposal and has prepared a counterproposal, which they're sharing with Mr. Hovde this week. The counterproposal largely follows the route that is requested by Mr. Hovde and avoids the permitted feedlot. I have not seen this, of course, but it is obviously a good thing that they are engaging in discussions with this individual landowner as to that alternative proposal. So hopefully in the next week or so we will have something in response, but at present we do not. As far as the analysis of the Robert Farabee Reed route, that was the Tesoro Corridor alternative proposal, and mostly in Dunn County, I believe. There is information that's been completed to file a late-filed exhibit, and that's expected by hopefully by the end of this week as well on that particular proposal. I don't know exactly what will amount to that, but we will have the company's position as to that hopefully in a week, by the end of this week or week or two, presumably. We talked quite a bit about this gentleman's property, the Schultz and Mr. Hilly's proposed reroute. There is analysis that's been completed, but it is still under review by Dakota Access, and they're looking at also having that filed by the end of this week as well, and we can then take a look at that as to what is the company's response as to Mr. Hilly, Mr. Schultz's proposed reroute. I'll stop there in case there may be some questions. Oh, I'm sorry, there's one more property that we had talked about, Rick Rice. That was a gentleman in the Kildare hearing that had thought that there were some items agreed to the company, and they are still working with Mr. Rice on this reroute, proposed reroute. I believe there is this has some interplay with the Enbridge placement of their lines as well. That is, I am informed, going to be this Rick Rice property routing will be part of what I understand to be about 9 or 10 minor reroutes that the company will be submitting at some point. We do not have those at present, and once we have a better idea as to what they will be, I think my thought is at least the staff will have discussions with the company as far as what would need to be done in order to address these proposed reroutes, and certainly we need to know where they're at, whether or not they're jurisdictional, certainly for the commission to look at, whether that might possibly require reopening and possibly having another hearing to talk about those. Those are some things that I don't have answers for you, commissioners, at this time, but I hope to have those once I have those reroutes at 9 to 10, or what indicated by the company are going to be proposed at that time. And the Rick Rice reroute, back to Rick Rice, would be a part of that, as I understand.
Okay, excellent. Thanks, Zach. Just, I'm looking through my notes, and I wrote down a Brian Rice.
Okay.
Is that the same person? Oh, there's two Rice. The one I wrote down had the four different lines and was working with Hess and Enbridge at the same time. That's not this one? Okay. Well, it must, maybe I've got it further back.
So I'll stop at the reroutes, and certainly if maybe I was talking a while, so I'll stop for questions that you might have of me or Julie.
You said that if the reroutes are jurisdictional to us. What do you mean by that?
Well, I suppose I use that kind of loosely in some respects as to what would need to be done as far as actually having to have a new hearing, or whether or not they were already part of the noticed corridor or not. It's just that I don't have those, so I need to take a look at them.
So if they are outside of the noticed corridor, it's likely we'd have
it's
to have
It's likely that we would have to have a hearing, yes.
Okay. Well, it would be good to know how that's been handled in the past on pipelines.
And quite frankly, you know, and certainly, you know, obviously, everyone involved in this matter would like to have everything right now. But I mean, I do think that it is a process, and you know, the company has shown an indication to work through this, and has been in contact with me to try to work through this. I think the main thing that they're working on. I don't mean to speak for the company, certainly not, but they are working, you know, quite extensively in obtaining easements, and I do have an update on that, but we'll get to that perhaps in a bit.
Next, yep. Randy, you have some questions on the reroutes?
Well, primarily one. You said it well that we all would like to have everything now, but it sounds like they're making progress, and most of these that I had questions on will have to wait. But you mentioned 9 or 10 others. Was there indication, sometimes in these, when we've done other pipeline hearings, there have been reroutes by the time we got to the hearing, and they've been just, you know, generally pretty much the same story. They were mostly within the original study area, and that they were landowner requests in order to get easements. Is there any kind of summary like that, or are these generally landowner requests that they want it changed a little bit, and so they're working on trying to accommodate that?
I know, Commissioner, I don't know that for sure, but it appears to me that some of them are. Whether or not all of them are or a majority of them are, I can't say.
Okay. Commissioner Kalk, any questions or discussion from your end on the reroutes?
No, I think I understand, I guess, what everybody's talking about. The only thing I would say is that, I guess for me, the final decision, I'm really okay with, you know, all the technical data that the company provided, but I would just like to see, you know, what's the final route they want us to approve or make a decision on. Until we get all that stuff settled out, it's really hard to do much of anything, so they need to do what they got to do to figure out what their final route they want us to, they're requesting us to approve is, and until then, it's really hard to move much farther.
Yeah. Well, it sounds like they're working to that goal, correct, Zach?
That's my understanding and the updates that I've received from the company.
Okay. Let's see. So that kind of covers the reroutes. How about, since you teed it up, why don't you offer up the update on the easements and that issue?
The easements, currently there are 69.2% obtained, which is up from about 64% the last time we met at the last work session. And they have indicated, the company has indicated that additional closings are scheduled for later this week, tomorrow and Friday. They also add that they are continuing to work diligently on obtaining additional easements. I did have the opportunity to communicate with Mr. Broughton, who's representing a group of interveners in this matter, and he indicated that he did receive a large amount of proposals from the company today and would be going through those proposals with his clients later this week, I believe he said. He hoped to have discussions with his clients. He'll be on the road meeting with them over the next 2 days and just discussing whether or not that proposal that was received today by him would be acceptable. Certainly if it was, then we would obviously see a bump up probably in the amount of easements obtained. But at this time, the company reports that they have 69.2%. And Commissioner Christman, I am sorry, I do not have the breakdown as to whether or not there are tracts or individual landowners. I should have anticipated that, but unfortunately I did not ask that question. So I don't have that information, but I certainly can get that to you after this work session.
Okay. Did Mr. Broughton give you any sense of his?
He was optimistic. He indicated that the company has always indicated, Mr. Rory, who testified at the hearings, two of the hearings, I believe, indicated that he was willing to continue to negotiate with the landowners, and Mr. Broughton is willing to continue to negotiate. Obviously, in negotiations, you know, at some point an agreement will be reached or an agreement will not be reached, and they are working on them. Certainly, though, you know, from the commission standpoint, you know, there is, you know, we have our considerations here that we have statutory and code administrative code provisions that we're to look at, and one of them is not necessarily looking at the issue of easement. So, in some respects, I think it's important to allow the individual landowners and the company to negotiate, but at the same time, certainly with that being said, at the same time, obviously there is great interest in what is being done because a lot of the issues that we are regulating do have some interplay, namely reclamation as to those. But I think you know, the company has agreed to the certification relating to order provisions in this matter, and has indicated that it would comply with those, and has testified as to those matters. So if there are issues that remain, and it's hard to say what, if this pipe, hypothetically speaking, of course, the pipeline is built, and then there are issues afterwards, the company is then bound by what the PSC has regulation over, which would include the reclamation aspect of it.
Okay, fair enough. Any questions for Zach on the easements? Brian, anything from you?
No, I think that was a good update.
My notes from the last work session indicated there's going to be some follow-up with the land department on their negotiations. Is that, I assume, some of the easements we're talking about here?
Yes, thank you for bringing that up, Commissioner Crispin. I have that on my list here. Dakota Access surveyors are working on updating plats for the land, for the state trust lands, per that department's request, involving some access roads around any bores or drills. And apparently that is, as I understand it, the one remaining action item that Dakota Access is working with the state trust lands department. They have a contact that they're working with and attempting to finalize that agreement. As I understand it, per the company, the state trust lands indicate to the company that they are requiring 95% acquisition on the route before they will execute rather an easement with Dakota Access. But this access road issue is the last remaining item between Dakota Access and the state land department. So those negotiations are apparently ongoing and continue to take place. And from what I receive from the company and update, it appears that they're very close to addressing all of the issues of the land department, barring the apparent position of the land department, which I don't have any information on, but apparently they're asking that, or requiring rather, that the 95% acquisition be obtained before they will enter into an easement.
So the company has to have 95% of their easements in order before the land department will sign on?
That is what my understanding of it is, Commissioner. I have not had an opportunity to follow up with the land department, but from what I understand in discussions with the company, that is the department's that department's position on the matter. Where they have the standing on that, I don't know, and certainly that's one state agency, obviously, and they have apparently taken a position on this issue.
Okay. Did we ask for anything specific from the company as a late file to tie up the state lands department issue, or what was our request to them on that?
Oh, I'd have to go back and look, but I believe that the understanding would be is it's just some ideally in typical, I'm thinking of in typical instances, we would have a letter indicating that the issues have been resolved. And I suppose in this case, I don't think, assuming everything is resolved, it would be that difficult to at least receive some indication from the land department that everything has been resolved. But I can put that on my list and take a look at that, Commissioner.
Okay, that would be great. Thanks, Zach. Anything else on that issue from Brian or Randy?
Not on the land department, but on easements yet.
Okay.
I do.
Okay, go ahead.
No, I'm good.
Is the Enbridge negotiations, are we considering that part of the easement acquisition, or is that?
That was going to be the next subject.
Okay, so I'll just hold off on that. Okay, then I'm done on easements.
Okay, excellent. So then let's talk for a minute about Enbridge and see what you've heard on how those discussions are progressing.
I think the long story short on this one, Commissioner, is that the two companies continue to work to resolve these issues. Today, the commission received by email from Mr. Van Grinsven, the attorney representing Enbridge, an overlay and several, there's six, I believe, additional exhibits presented. That was late this morning. Ms. Prescott and I received that and have not had yet a chance to review that in any detail. I understand that Dakota Access Dakota Access wish to review that before it was submitted by Enbridge, and there may have been some type of miscommunication. But in any event, we will be receiving those, or have received them by email, and we'll be receiving those overlays and maps and what Enbridge North Dakota Pipeline considers to be its preference on the co-location of the proposed pipeline, Dakota Access Pipeline, as to the Sandpiper and the other pipeline that's at issue with Enbridge. So that is still being worked on. I understand in communications with both attorneys that Enbridge and Dakota Access still wish to resolve those issues and remain committed to doing that. But as of right now, there is still work to be done on that.
All right. I don't have any questions on that then. Do you?
I do not.
Randy? Brian, any questions on the Enbridge issue?
Nope. Sounds good to me.
Okay. I will just make one comment, and this probably goes without saying, but I'll just say it just for emphasis. I appreciate everyone trying to get their stuff in before the work sessions. The whole goal of that is to try to speed along this whole process and give us the information to evaluate and make a decision quicker. But when it comes in that late, it ends up being kicked up to the next work session anyway. So if there's any way for the parties to get this stuff in a little bit more in advance of the work sessions, then we'll be able to have more productive work sessions and speed along a decision. Otherwise, if it comes in the morning of the work session, it's just going to get kicked off to the next work session anyway. So you might as well just wait and get it done the way you want it. So let's throw that out there.
I was thinking, based on the volume of information that seems to have come in today, maybe we just need to schedule more work sessions.
Well, we will be.
It's like quite a catalyst.
Well, it's just like, you know, those deadlines, they drive everybody, myself included.
Well, you know, and that might be outside of the scope of today's, but I mean, in some respects, I mean, we certainly, nothing would prevent us from setting deadlines for when we are to receive late filed exhibits, and that may be something that we may want to think about doing in the future. Certainly, the courts set deadlines all the time, and you know, that may be something that we can set a deadline. Certainly, you know, extension requests can be made if under good showing a good cause or whatnot, but it may be worthwhile to set deadlines in future hearings, but that's maybe for another discussion.
Yeah, I've, from my perspective, figure that the companies have the greatest interest in a speedy process.
That's
and
true.
So if they aren't in a rush, then they can take as much time as they want, knowing that we'll have to take a little bit of extra time after we get what they give us. So.
And really, as much as a person wants to move along, these are complex issues.
They are.
Like what Enbridge and Dakota Access are going through, it's complex dealing with these landowners. I mean, it's summertime. They're not always easily available.
Right.
It sounds like they have made quite a bit of progress.
They have, and they've got four states or more, I forget, four to work through. So this is, you know, just one piece of the puzzle here in North Dakota.
That's true.
Okay. Let's see. One of the late filed exhibits that did, two of them that did come in, was the Trenton Station plot and the additional information on the leaks incidences dating back to 2005. Do you have anything to go through in terms of the Trenton Station plot? Remind me what we were looking at here.
Well, yes, just briefly, Commissioner, that came in as late filed Exhibit 9. There was a question as to whether or not the county had approved it for a conditional use permit. It has been approved as of July 7th of 2015. There was a question that we asked the company about whether or not additional environmental cultural studies were completed on the alternate site, and they have been. We believe, and they are the company is going to confirm that there were no exclusion or avoidance areas, culture impacts, or wetlands involved in that. So we are waiting on that, but it appears that there are not, but we'll seek confirmation of that. Julie, did you have anything else on that? No. Okay, good.
Okay. And they've received the local permit for this?
Yes.
Okay.
And while we're on tank facilities, I'll just add, too, that the Stanley Tank Terminal was also approved by the Stanley City Council on July 14th. So there is a permit for that terminal as well.
Okay. Excellent. Let's see here. I've got to check some of these things off here. On the leak history, I looked at this a few weeks ago when it first came in, and haven't gotten back to it this morning for a refresh, but my sense was at the time that there was really nothing significant that jumped out, you know, any larger than what was noted on the earlier document. So I do appreciate the company providing this and giving us this this updated, more in-depth leak history and filing that so we have it as part of the record. Did you have anything that jumped out at you, either you, Julie, or Zach?
No, I would defer to Ms. Prescott on that, and I didn't see anything that was, and she indicates that she didn't see anything either, so.
Randy?
I thought, too, it was about as was summarized in the hearing when
yep.
we discussed it. There have been instances, but, you know, it was about as they explained it.
Yeah. Commissioner Kalk, anything to add on the Trenton facility or the leak history document?
No, I don't think so.
All right. Zach, do you have more items on your list? I have a few on mine, but I'll let you go through yours.
Yeah, just a few. If you want me to go first, or
sure,
you can go?
Sure, you okay. Go ahead.
All right. There was a question as to whether or not there was a need for a conditional use permit from Williams County for the pipeline itself. Apparently, according to the company, that there had been zoning ordinances in place that would have required that, but they've since changed. The Williams County planning staff recently adopted language to provide that no conditional use permit would be needed in Williams County for pipelines under the PSC's jurisdiction. And the company has requested a letter from the Planning Zoning Department at Williams County just indicating that. Apparently, in another pipeline, Vantage Pipeline, Westspur Pipeline, PU 15142, a similar letter was sent on that particular case confirming that. So that should be wrapped up, but we'll be looking for that that letter from Williams County. The waivers for businesses or residences within 500 feet of the proposed line, Dakota Access has acquired 9 of the 11 waivers, expects to acquire the remaining 2 soon in conjunction with easement acquisitions. We have just this morning received copies of the ones I have received them, copies of the ones that they do have. The remaining waivers are not associated with any of the interveners in this case.
And is the 11 businesses and residences?
That's 11 combined, right? I think. Oh, the numbers, but they were a split of that. But as I understand it, and in reviewing the waivers, the actual waivers that I viewed and received this morning, there was a mixture. I don't have the exact breakdown of the 11, though.
It was 8 and 3.
8 and 3, thank you.
Yeah.
8 residences.
And 3 business.
Okay, so last time my notes, which, you know, may or may not be correct, obviously, had 8 residences, and 5 were acquired, and 3 were still needed. I wrote down that they had acquired 4 business waivers, and 3 more were needed. So that's where I'm apparently pretty far off.
Well, Commissioner, let us double-check on that, and we'll see what our notes reflect, and we can follow up with the company on that.
Mm-hmm.
Okay.
Just to ensure that it is a total of 11 and ensure that's correct.
And as long as we're following up on it anyway, if you could find out what the other 2 are, if they're businesses, residences, or 1 of each.
Mm-hmm.
Certainly.
And you said they weren't interveners?
They were not. So they're not interveners. So I think Commissioner Kolk had brought up this question. Mm-hmm. If the intervener, say, for example, hypothetically, if Mr. Broughton and his group of clients are able to reach an agreement to go to access, none of these waivers would be in that group, in those intervener mm-hmm. groups.
So they won't be settled by that either.
Well, right. Mm-hmm. But indications from the company that I received are such that they anticipate having those soon. Now, what soon is exactly, I can't say, but, you know, as far as I know, as far as what the company has represented, they continue to work with these landowners to achieve the easement. And the easement, as I understand it, is the easement and the waiver are tied up.
Sure.
They're together. So as I understand it, once the easement is obtained, then the waiver would also be obtained at that time.
Okay.
One more question on that. Is the Hovde feedlot, is that considered a business that's within 500 feet? And that would
right.
thus be one of these that they're working on a reroute, or is that not considered a business?
That's a very good question. And it probably goes to our farms consider businesses and occupied structures is what we're looking at, occupied structures. Now, as I understand it, the Hovde feedlot is permitted, but it's not built. It's not up and running, so to speak. So at this time, it wouldn't be an occupied structure in my mind, but certainly if it were and then it came on after, presumably there would have to be well, if it came after the permit was issued and the pipe was installed, then where that falls, they would have known about that. And if it's not within the easement, the permanent easement of the pipeline, then presumably the Hovdes could build that feedlot regardless, and no subsequent waiver would be required. But if it was in existence, then I think that there'd be a valid question. I think then in that instance, I'd have to look at it a little bit closer, but my gut, as sitting here today, would be such that they would require a waiver for that type of property.
But since it's not occupied, now it's not like
not occupied.
Solving that issue.
No,
checks one of these off our box. So
that's correct.
Okay.
They could be creating an issue down the road, though. So hopefully that.
Well, I don't know that they would create it. Not to disagree with you so quickly, Commissioner, but I think that if Mr. Hovde and his family knew about this pipeline, because if it's going through their property, they presumably would. If they then chose to build a feedlot within 500 feet of that pipeline, that would be their almost acquiescence to the fact that it was there. Whether or not the commission, after having granted the permit at that point in time, under our hypothetical, if we've granted the permit, he goes and then builds a feedlot after, whether or not there's no requirement that an after-acquired waiver be obtained at that point.
Is that the case?
I don't think it's the case. I think it's just a hypothetical situation.
No, but yeah. This came up in our discussion earlier this week about facilities that are built closer to a pipeline than, you know, after
the pipeline is built, right?
Yeah, and it does cause a problem for the pipeline owners.
Sure.
In terms of, and so we didn't get to the bottom of whether who's responsible for that waiver or for letting it happen, but it's an issue.
Sure. If I could jump in on that, I mean, we've done some research on that, and whatever their easement they give up for the pipeline, they can't build inside it, let's say that 30-foot easement. But, you know, I mean, initially you can't have a house within 500 feet of a pipeline, but then once that pipeline is built or a power line, if someone chooses to be closer than that, like let's say 250 feet, there's nothing anybody can do about it. The only thing they really lock up is the actual full-time easement that goes with the actual pipeline route or the power line route, because we've seen that happen a lot in transmission lines where we cited it and everything was fine. Then you come back a couple years later, people have built right up to it. It's legal.
And then I suppose the issue then, Commissioner, is if there's some type of update or upgrade to that line that's needed, then in the future, then presumably at that point mm-hmm. that could come into play. But I would agree with Commissioner Kolk.
Okay. Good.
That, yeah.
All right.
So you're going to just email or get in touch with us and give us an update on these, what the other two are and that sort of thing? Or
I can,
or does
I
that,
can
this
do
all
that,
wait
yes.
until the next work session?
I will as soon as I get them, I will update you on these issues okay. that are arising here today, certainly.
Okay. Well, anything else on your list, Zach?
Sorry to keep going here, but
right.
the last thing too, the company anticipates doing a proposed findings of facts, conclusions of law and order soon. Mr. Broughton also indicated that he was anticipating doing the same on that. So we don't have those yet, but I anticipate those soon. The last issue is with tree clearing, and I'll just read to you the response of the company. So the confusion with regard to the tree clearing appears to be caused by a misunderstanding between the construction phase and the subsequent operations of the pipeline. Tree clearing for open trench construction will be 85 feet in forested areas. For operations, however, only 30 feet of the 50 feet right-of-way will be maintained tree-free in forested areas. Forested areas do not include windbreaks or occasional trees and other land uses. In those areas where Dakota Access intends to use directional boring to install the pipeline, only 30 feet will be cleared between the entry and exit points of the bore. That 30-foot strip will remain tree-free for safety reasons, like preventing root damage, and to provide visual inspections of the pipeline route. So what I surmise from this, commissioners, is essentially there is going to be, for that area where there's boring, there's going to be the 30-foot that would be cleared. So after the pipeline is installed, then there would be the ability to visually observe it aerially, as well as if need be on foot, I suppose, to do that. So that's my understanding on the tree issues. I know that came up as far as, landowners' concern about removal of trees near a water crossing, for example, as I recall. And that is the company's position on the tree clearing. While it would not have to be the full 50-foot permanent easement, which is what I understand the company is achieving in most instances for landowners, it would not be clearing that full 50 feet in certain instances. It would just depend on that issue.
Okay. Julie, can you share some of the research you've done on the issue of tree clearing? Because there was some concern from some of the landowners in highly erodible areas of the clearing of trees.
Can I ask a question of Zach before you
sure.
move into that? Because it's going to keep haunting me. When they're talking about the 30-foot permanent,
mm-hmm.
we're talking about 30 feet on each side of the pipe?
50 feet on each side of the pipe, as I understand it.
15 feet.
50, 50, 50.
That's for construction.
You're right. 50 feet total. 25 on each side of
okay.
the center line. Is the permanent, and then 30 feet is total 30 feet, so 15, 15.
For the boring.
For placement, for removal of trees. So they have a 30-foot strip, a total of 30-foot strip for...
That will remain clear.
Removal, that will be remain clear.
Okay.
Yep.
Okay. So in the hearings, a number of folks talked about the value of leaving the trees in certain areas to help with minimizing erosion, et cetera. And we questioned whether it was a PHMSA requirement to remove all the trees and have line of sight from a plane to the pipeline route, or, if that was a PHMSA requirement to clear all the trees, basically. And you and Pat did some research on that and have gotten to the bottom of that issue, I believe. So can you share what you found?
Commissioner, I did have a chance to visit with Pat, and he pointed to me to Section 195.412, Inspection of Right-of-Ways and Crossings Under Navigable Waters, and it states that each operator shall, at intervals not exceeding 3 weeks but at least 26 times each calendar year, inspect the surface conditions on or adjacent to each pipeline right-of-way. Methods of inspection include walking, driving, flying, or other appropriate means of traversing the right-of-way. It does not specify in here exactly what types of clearing are necessary or what types of inspection are necessary. It's very, very generous.
Okay.
That's what exists.
Did you find any other further application on this of this rule?
I did not. Visiting with Pat, we didn't come up with anything else. Although I will mention, and the testimony, part of the discussion about the tree clearing was in conjunction with the Little Missouri crossing, and they did testify at one point that they do plan to bore that. And where they bore, they would leave. There was also testimony that they, correct me, Zach, if I'm speaking here, but they indicated they would be willing to leave the root base to hold the soil at those points.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. The fellow I'm thinking about was not, it wasn't a river crossing.
There was another one as well.
Mm-hmm. Hold on one sec. I'd have to I'll dig him out.
Well, in my mind, the Wolf case up north of Kildare or somewhere up there probably was the toughest because he testified that someone else has been through there, and I don't remember if it was a underground power line or phone line or pipeline or what, but something where they cleared trees and there's been significant erosion issues because of it, and this is apparently right nearby, and so it seems only logical that he may be right that there could be problems in this case too if they're clear cut. So
that's Little Missouri. The one I'm thinking of.
That is the Little Missouri crossing.
Okay.
Did you want to talk about?
Okay.
That
well.
That situation.
Well.
Well, I throw my 2 cents into this discussion, if it's okay, Julie. I appreciate the challenges that in some of those highly erodible areas, but there's no way you should have trees on top of a pipeline of this size with their roots going down over the life. I mean, I just couldn't see that making any sense. If you wanted to work something out, we're leaving the root base in place or something, maybe, but roots in the pipelines, I want nothing to do with that.
Rodney Wolf.
As it turns out, Commissioners, Section 26 that Mr. Wolf testified to, actually, the pipeline does not cross Section 26, just for your information.
Well, that's certainly good to know.
It crosses Section 25, and I double-checked that again this morning, so there may have been some confusion there.
Okay. Yeah, I see his coordinates.
We'll get to the bottom of that, Commissioners, and,
okay.
and update you.
All right. Okay. Let's see here. We got the river crossing distances. That was something we had before the last one. The only other issue I wanted to talk a little bit about, Zach, were you done?
I'm done.
Okay.
I think, though, before we wrap that up, as far as Brian makes a really good point, you don't want a bunch of great big trees right over the top of this pipeline, any pipeline. But if there are you don't want a bunch of erosion occurring either.
Yes.
And so if that's the issue, maybe it's a place that a reroute has to be considered, though. And to me, that's kind of the issue. Now Julie's brought up certainly a whole new point in all this, so I'm fine. I just wanted to throw that in, that I do agree mm-hmm. as far as not having significant tree stands over the top of the pipeline.
Yeah, well, it seems to me that PHMSA would have more specific rules if that was a huge concern. They would prohibit trees from being a certain distance from the line, so it's curious to me that they don't. They're the safety experts, so
I think
they have discretion intentionally to leave trees for whatever certain reasons, and if there's some noteworthy erosion reason, then I think the company should exercise that discretion and not just blow through and say we got to have 30 feet, period. I mean, this flexibility exists for a reason, and they should use it, not just take whatever is the easiest way to get the job done. So.
Well, Julie, I've had discussion about PHMSA and a lot of things, and the thing is that I think they purposely leave it a little vaguer so states can do what states think they want to. And if a company wants to do a 40-foot horizontal drill like do it under a lake, you're going to be well below the root depth. So I think they give us flexibility that if they had to do it, and you put this thing below the roots of the trees in that area, we're not going to have that problem. So it becomes a series of choices. Do you want to go at 48 inches and take the trees out, or do you want to go at 20 feet and leave the trees into place? So I guess that's why I think they leave it for us to make those kind of decisions.
Yeah, maybe. Okay, anything else on that?
I was just going to mention, Commissioner, Julie and I were meeting this morning, and we noted that in the tree shrub mitigation plan that we have in each pipeline case, there is reference to 30 feet in there, and that could be where we, unfortunately, it's beyond our institutional knowledge as to where that came from exactly. But we are working on trying to find out where that came from.
Okay, good. Okay, well, flexibility is a good thing. The only other issue I want to talk about, Brian, Randy, do you have anything else that you want to bring up? I want to talk a little bit about the construction inspection and reclamation stuff, and that's the only thing left on my list.
I have that on my list, too, and a couple other that I think are pretty quick ones, so I don't care what order you want to take.
Sure, no, you go ahead.
I actually had this on my list last time, and either I neglected to write down the answer and have forgotten, or I neglected to ask the question. But somewhere along the line in the testimony, it was discussed that the boring was going to be 60 feet below Lake Oahe and 35 to 55 feet below the Missouri River. Did they ever give us any reason as to why, on the short end of that range on the Missouri River, it's barely more than half as far below as it is on Lake Oahe? Did they indicate why that range is that way?
Commissioner, I seem to recall, and I'm basing this off of my inexact memory, that there was some discussion, but I'm not comfortable in answering that question. I'll have to go back and look. And if it's not in there, then I will certainly find that answer out for you, Commissioner.
Okay. And then,
Randy, if I could, Randy, I didn't hear exactly what Zach's answer was, but I recall some discussion. It was just the angle that you have to approach because of given the width of Hawaii, that's what ends up being so much deeper because you have such more distance. You got to angle down, over, and come back up, so it ends up being a whole bunch deeper.
Didn't they also do profiles of the soils underneath and try to identify the best possible layer for the bore? And I thought that was what determined the depth as well as the angle.
That very well may be. As Commissioner Kalk noted, I seem to also remember some discussion. I just don't have a recollection of what it was exactly, but I will find that out and report back.
Okay.
And my other one besides the inspection regime was the shutoffs on either side of the Knife River. If you recall, Mr. Wanner expressed concern, and I know we discussed it last time, but did we get any more information? I know the short answer at the hearing was, well, they like to have them out by the road, but
Commissioner, we haven't gotten any other type of clarification on that specific question. So the question in your mind is why can't it be closer to the river crossing itself?
Correct.
Yeah. Okay. I can find that out for you, sir.
Okay.
Anything else, Randy?
Nope, that's it.
How about you, Brian? Any questions for
discussion? No, I might have some closing comments when we're done, but nothing now.
Okay. Okay, then regarding the whole reclamation issue, some of that and construction inspection, some a lot of the reclamation issues, I suspect, will be covered in the easements that they're negotiating, because that was a very, seemed to be in a very key point of Mr. Broughton and those folks during the hearing. So,
and even if not, Commissioner, they are certainly covered by our rules and statute requirements as well as in the certification.
Right, right. They've signed the certification. So I think that all of that, all of the specific items that we might need are covered in the certification document to hold them, certainly to hold them accountable for getting it done right. The construction inspection process really is separate from this order and occurs, you know, under a contract that the commission signs with third-party inspectors. And Julie and Pat and I have met on that issue a number of times and have been looking at ways, not just for this project, but for all the projects, of maybe tweaking how that inspection process is implemented. And we'll have some thoughts and more specifics to bring forward on that issue as it applies to all pipelines down the road. So, but, you know, we ask the, in general, we ask the companies, the third-party inspectors, to make sure that the line has been constructed to, you know, the standards laid out in the order, and that will remain the same. It's just that we may start using a few additional, we might be more specific in the inspection contracts for when and how often we want them out there overseeing the construction process to make sure that we can get the kind of reporting that we think is necessary and effective in the end. Does that characterize that accurately in your mind, Julie?
Yes, Ms. Commissioner.
All right. Do you guys, Brian or Randy, have any thoughts or questions? I mean, we can, I do anticipate a separate work session just on construction inspection, kind of like we've done on certification, et cetera.
The only thing I would offer up, Julie, is I think you're on the right track. It becomes a challenge with some of these smaller pipelines with very small amounts of dollars, what kind of, you know, robust inspection program you can have. I think one thing the three of us should look at is that, you know, we started contracting this out because we didn't have enough manpower to do it, and maybe this is one of those things that is in our FT request next budget cycle, because it's a big deal, and some of the smaller pipelines, it's hard to do much than what we're doing because there's just the dollars aren't there.
Yeah, yep, that can certainly be part of the discussion.
Well, I will say, you know, just, you know, that you hear the anecdotal complaints about reclamation, and so I'm not citing any specific ones, but I thought about that a lot last week when I went along on a mine reclamation visit, and the intense inspection process we put the coal mines through. And I mean, not that mine reclamation is without complaints, but we don't get a lot of complaints on the subject. And I think a lot of it has to do with that inspection regime. You know, for several years, we send people out there pretty regularly, and it was pretty interesting, and I've been with before, but it was just refreshing watching our inspector out there and concerning himself with the amount of non-native species of grass and weeds and erosion and things like that, and it's a significant amount of extra work and trouble, but if it leads to better reclamation, it will cause less trouble for future easement acquisitions on other projects. And so, I don't know, certainly a balance is in order, but I appreciate the direction you're heading with revisiting what we require in an inspection process.
Yeah, good. And Julie and Pat did visit with the guys upstairs, with Jim, and they've done some additional discussion with some of the environmental specialists who are very familiar with pipeline construction. Found this NDSU document that outlines the best practices for reclamation in Western North Dakota in relation to oil and gas development. So it's very specific. And so those are the types of things that we'll be using to, you know, it's, I don't view it as being a dramatic change in the construction inspection, but it'll certainly be more, I think, more targeted at the key points during the construction process that are vital to proper reclamation, and making sure that we have third-party inspectors out there at those times to end up with the best results. And so I think it's going in a good direction, and it'll end up in an improved inspection process that should be better for everybody involved, including the company. So, anything else on that?
One, just going back, a question that I wish now I had asked earlier. With the land department, do they, I just don't recall, do they have a large amount of acreage for whom they're seeking easements here, or is it just a quarter or two somewhere along the way?
They did not testify.
Got to be a little closer, or Brian will be able to hear.
I have an effect on microphones. I had encouraged them to testify several times, and they didn't testify at any of our hearings. I can tell you off on this. I can prepare something for the next work session, but I don't remember how many acres it is or how many miles it is.
And the reason I ask is, you know, as we look at easement acquisition, and, you know, there's been some progress. What did you say, 69.some%? As I recall, Mr. Broughton represents, was it about 15%? If the state is a significant percentage, then, you know, if two groups signed off, that would be a pretty long way toward getting toward 100%. And so that's why I ask. I'm just curious how sizable of a percentage they might be.
From what I understand, too, Commissioner, I think that a lot of folks are waiting to see what others do. Not just the interveners, but even the remainder are waiting to see what their neighbor does and et cetera. It's anecdotal understanding that I have. So if there is a breakthrough, then it may be, you know, of course, it's complete speculation what will happen.
Sure.
Complete speculation, but
okay. Well, looks like we've got some more updates on the reroutes. It's probably the reroutes and the waivers, and the Enbridge. Those are the three big issues remaining. As I look through my notes of issues. So we're making progress. I think we started with sort of 10 big issues, and we're down narrowing it down. So look forward to the next progress report. We'll set a meeting maybe at the end here. But I want to kick it over to Brian and Randy. If you guys have any closing comments, Brian, do you want to go first?
Sure. Just thank you, Julie, for all your work in this, and Zach and Julie and Pat. I think we've made a lot of steps, but I still go back to what I said earlier. We've really got to figure out what the final route they want us to make a decision on. And as we talk about waivers and easements and all that, that's still kind of an arbitrary discussion until we find out exactly what they're wanting us to approve or not approve. So appreciate the work everybody's done, but it's really on the company to get us what they want here.
Okay, very good. Randy, any thoughts?
I really have nothing else except for, you know, as things develop, if someone submits information even the day before or a few days before the next work session, that would be fine, too. It doesn't have to wait until that day.
Yes. We watch the record closely when we're leading up to work sessions. It's almost like Christmas. Oh, yay, something's been filed.
If we're going to do scheduling, nerds. I need to go get my iPad.
Oh, yeah. I think, Brian, would you like to schedule another work session right now, or do you want to wait till our next meeting? Can you do that and drive?
Oh, I think we can give it a shot.
Okay.
Randy's what could go wrong?
Randy's going to get his calendar. Zach, in your discussions with the company, do you have a thought? Should we wait a month? Should we, you know, try to get it sooner than that? I really would like to have you know, all this reroute information for the next one so we can have a serious discussion. Well, then maybe we'll need to have one sooner than that if there's some need for another hearing.
Right. You know, I would say probably 3 weeks.
Okay.
Just to be safe, and you know, hopefully we'll get, you know, some of these late filed exhibits in, you know, the end of this week or early next week, and then that'll give us time to, A, take a look at them, be prepared for the next work session, or B, if some additional time, something comes up and the company can't quite get it in the next week, this week or early next week, then it gives a little bit of leeway time.
Okay, so if we are looking 3 weeks, that's the week of September 14th. That week, we have a commission meeting. We could do it after our director's meeting that afternoon of the 16th. We could do it at schedule it for 2:30. Or I would be available on the 14th. But I'm not available. We've got a hearing on the 17th out of town, and I'm out of town on the 18th. So,
do we have an informal that day, or are we just holding that for an informal?
I think it's still being held because we have the director's meeting scheduled for that hour.
Well, the 16th works fine for me, as does the 14th. So,
yeah, either one of those works for me as well.
Zach, how about you?
You said the 16th at 2:30?
Yep.
That would work, and the 14th, I'm free all day.
All right. Well, let's go with the 14th then. Just so we don't jam up that afternoon quite as much, we may have...
afternoon?
Yeah, like 1:30 on the 14th.
That's fine by me.
Okay. 1:30 September 14th, the next work session, and hopefully we'll be able to have a good discussion about the reroutes, waivers, and the Enbridge issue at that
Agreed.
Meeting. All right. Well, that concludes the work session on case number PU dash, what is this one?
142.
PU-14-882. 842. I don't have that memorized. Thank you.
Thank you.